Thank you for downloading this podcast from policyreview.tv.
Thank you very much, Miranda. Well, I've got a few minutes for questions. Just to ask, if I may, just a couple of technical ones. Just to establish the staffing responsibility, I mean, it's basically the office of the commissioner, isn't it?
Technically, no. I've got a small team of about a dozen people. Commissioner, quite rightly, discussed the fact that we needed more strategic level input, and the commissioner has appointed three assistants, and we've also got a secondment of an assistant chief officer from probation. So we're now able, and we'd also made some changes within our own structure, so we're able to deal with a lot of the things we needed to do with the commissioner and his deputy. So over the Christmas holidays, a letter came in from Unison expressing disquiet about a particular matter to the commissioner as the employer, which is lovely, apart from the fact that nobody knew it had happened. In fairness, neither did the constabulary. It was a decision taken by a manager and not communicated terribly well. But it's absolutely right that the commissioner would be involved in that, in all of those decisions, because he is the employer of the staff. So a commissioner, one of the things that police authorities did was sit on a joint negotiating board for police staff called the Police Staff Council. It's got 10 places for police and crime commissioners. A commissioner might decide he doesn't want to be part of that joint negotiating body and that he will negotiate directly matters to do with pay, terms and conditions, etc., for his staff. Now, that's entirely the commissioner's decision, not the chief constable's. And obviously, it would then impact on the role of the head of paid service.
Okay. Thanks. Alan, you wanted to comment?
Yes, because I think this is quite interesting. I think, if I can say so, Miranda, you were very wise not to enter into the whole discussion of the nature of the corporation soul.
No.
I've had a long-standing debate with the Information Commissioner about his status as a corporation soul and all sorts of decisions and the language that's used about the office of the Information Commissioner. Because I don't think you can talk in that language. It's either a decision made by the Information Commissioner or acting in his powers. And the situation that we now have is that the South Wales Police has two corporation souls. And you've actually got to decide what the relationship between those two is and the rest of the organisation. Is it a single organisation or is it two? This part two transfers issues raises all sorts of interesting questions. I'm very fortunate because we're having a very joined up conversation. I'm very fortunate in the Chief Constable, Peter Bourne, because we're actually trying to get the right answer rather than defending territory. And for instance, in relation to the finance officer, one of the conclusions that we came to was that why should I build up a finance officer and a department to duplicate what we've got for the force? So what we need is an open book policy so that everything that's done is done by the department to inform the decisions of both the commissioner and the chief constable. And you're clear between you about who's taking which decisions. So what I'm doing at the moment is recruiting, because there was a vacancy, we didn't have a chief finance officer inherited from the police authority, is appointing a chief finance officer. He'll have one person, or she will have one person working to them, who will be on secondment from Umar Hussain, the director of finance. So therefore rooted in the methodology and what's going on within the finance department. But if there's one organisation that understands where loyalty goes on a secondment, it's the police service. Mm. So why should we have two bureaucracies staring at each other across the corridor? I'm trying to eradicate, along with acronyms and initials, the use of the word Office of the Police Commissioner. I'd rather regard them as my team, and that we're all part of the South Wales Police, but with different functions within it. And these two corporations, Seoul, have the opportunity of deciding how we fulfil our functions together in relation to the whole of that organisation. Now, as Miranda said, there's lots of different ways in which this is being worked out. I took a decision. I haven't got the organisational background and the sort of intelligence and thought that I know chief executives have put into this over the last year as they work up the preparation. I like the description description of chief executive's job being to get the organisation right rather than the commissioner having to bother his or her head about it. But I've actually reached a similar conclusion. So we previously had a chief executive and deputy chief executive to the police authority. One of those posts was vacant. The deputy was acting up. I've appointed the confirmed the then deputy as chief of staff, fulfilling the role of chief executive as required in the Act and monitoring officer. But that's because the number two in terms of doing things is going to be the deputy or the assistant commissioner. So it's a different type of structure. Mm. And I think you can get those definitions right in legal terms, but also sensible in organisational terms if you think them through.
Okay, thank you very much. Now let's take a couple of comments or questions on the floor. If you could say who you are, please.
I'm John Plummer. I've been working on youth justice in the UK for some time, and particularly recently in South Wales with Gwalia, one of the big housing associations down there. I'm very grateful for those two contributions from the Commissioner and the Chief Executive. I found them really very informative, and I must congratulate Commissioner Michael on pulling together that plan within the 6 weeks that he has. Can I just pick up a couple of points from it? First of all, I'm very, very keen indeed to see the justice reinvestment feature on the plan. Secondly, the bringing together the age range of 16 to 25 is something that I think should have been done a long time ago. This whole issue of transition to adulthood is very important and has been neglected by some. But also, while you mentioned the importance and value of the role of the youth offending teams, you did not even put on the bottom of the plan the probation service, which of course has this crucial job in respect of half of those 16 to 25s, or more than half. And I think that there are a couple of interesting examples of probation and YOT beginning to work together in England, and I would hope that your plan would reflect the importance of that, because rehabilitation was also not featured there. I just wondered if you could comment on those.
Thanks very much indeed. Yes, I think justice reinvestment ought to be on the agenda. I don't think it is within the criminal justice system as a whole. And I think actually the criminal justice system is going to find the experience of having commissioners around and taking an interest in what they do rather interesting. We had an interesting meeting with the judges in Wales a couple of weeks ago, which I probably shouldn't comment on, but I think it's going to be an interesting conversation. You're right about the issue of transition to adulthood. I was a member of the executive of the National Youth Bureau, or the board of the National Youth Bureau, some 30 plus years ago, when they did a piece of work on the process of enfranchisement, in other words, growing up. And one of the conclusions was it's incredibly complicated. The legal staging and the issues of maturity are incredibly complex. I would challenge any country in the world to make it more complex than we have in the UK. So I think you're right, and that's why, whereas I would defend the decision that was the proposition that came forward in the 98 Act, which I was responsible for the focus on the under 18 age group, I do think it's time to move on from that. That has been successful, but let's look at the next stage up. As far as the probation service is concerned, I've always worked well with the probation service. I'm particularly pleased to see it going back to a patch system. They've been absent from local decision making from a very long time, and I'm quite impressed with the way in which reorganisation in Wales has gone in recent months. I said a fortnight ago when the government came out with their decisions about the future of the probation service that the ministers need to make up their minds and let the probation service get on with it. It's better to have certainty on bad news than not to have any news at all and constant picking up the stone and turning it over to see if there are any fresh worms. I'd be reasonably optimistic, but we don't quite know how it's going to work out. The devil's in the detail. We've had the main announcement, but I certainly would see the probation service as being absolutely key, and I hope that when they work through what the implications of the latest decisions are, that will be the case. I've had a meeting with the head of the probation service in Wales, and it was very productive, and certainly I would see them part of that. But I think we need to see a bit of clarity about where they're going to be in a few months' time before being absolutely sure how it's going to fit on some things. The drug intervention programme, for instance, then the synergy between what probation is doing, what the health service in Wales is doing, and so on, is already there. Okay. With the continuation of funding for the coming year, and then a review during the course of this year about whether we're doing it in the right way.
Thanks very much. Did you want to add anything?
No, I think that's
comprehensive.
Entirely well.
Okay. Any other points and questions to put, gentlemen there?
Hi, I'm Dave Tucker from the NSPCC. I'm just interested. You talked about services for victims. I'm interested because I'm not quite sure where the MOJ is now with the commissioning of services to support victims and witnesses at court.
Ah.
Any ideas about how that's going to happen, and more importantly, how you're going to finance it?
Yes, I'm rather concerned about it. I mean, the last speech I made in the House of Commons before I stood down in October was in a debate that was stimulated by Tony Lloyd and myself on victims in the criminal justice system. And I made the point there that I think there's a muddle going on because we're told that the financing of victim support will be devolved to police and crime commissioners from next year, but that certain aspects will stay national. Now, national procurement of specialist services, victims of rape and sexual attack, the homicide victims and their families, support. Those are specialised, probably makes sense for them to procure nationally. What personally I don't think makes sense is to retain national procurement of witness service so that it's separate for victim service. If you look at the situation as far as most victims are concerned, if somebody's arrested, the continual will being a victim and getting victim support, then becoming a witness, but they're still a victim after the court experience, and it's very often the case that they feel more vulnerable and more battered as a result of the experience in court. And if police and crime commissioners are being given this remit to make sure the victims are treated properly within their area, in my view, it should be the continuum. Now, victim support, I know, took the view that actually it should be all procured nationally in order that there should be a consistency of services across the country. And I think it's a very good case for that. But if it's going to be devolved, give us the responsibility for the continuum, is my argument. And I think it's a bit of defensiveness within the Ministry of Justice. I've no evidence for this, but it's a deep suspicion. And they want to hang on to the bit that's to do with courts rather than having the challenge for commissioners. Well, they're going to get the challenge for commissioners because the remit is given there by government. We have a responsibility to challenge. So I think you raise a very interesting area where I think government is muddled, and there's a muddle across the two departments, and we'll have to try to get sense out of the muddle as time goes on. I found the engagement of organisations that are interested in representing victims to be superb. I've had good meetings along with the Deputy Chief Constable with Victim Support, along with a police officer who's seconded to my team and one of my staff with Women's Aid in Wales. And those discussions are very much about practicalities. But I think you raise a question where I think there's a policy muddle.
Okay, thanks. Do you want to...
Yeah, I would just add, I've had this morning, in fact, had a communication to say that the MOJ is looking to arrange regional meetings with commissioners to hear some of these things in advance of whatever they decide to transfer. And on a really local issue, commissioners, certainly in Lancashire, the commissioner has appointed an assistant commissioner to lead on the victim's agenda, but also to highlight where there are particular concerns. We've got a very large organised crime trial where one of the witnesses is a vulnerable young person who is going to be cross-examined by 7 barristers. And that's sensible because exactly why. So there's something that says I would fully expect commissioners to be challenging a number of bodies, including the judiciary, on why some of the things that happen are allowed to happen. I'll echo the comment that Alan made earlier. I'm not entirely sure that the consequences of creating this role were fully thought through. But there are 41 people with enormous constituencies and vast amounts of political clout who are going to start saying, whoa, hang on a minute, which is interesting.
Thanks very much. Any other point anybody wants to make? I've just got one point I just quite raised before we wrap up. Associations. We've touched on, you touched on Solace. I believe the now obviously the APO has become the Association of Police and Crime Commissioners. I wondered if you might just say a little bit about the role of these associations and how you respectively the Chief Executive and the Commissioners fit in.
I think as far as the Association of Police and Crime Commissioners is concerned, we had a conference yesterday in which there was general agreement of the need to have a way of coming together and having a voice for commissioners and deciding on representation into a large number of bodies where there is representation requested. But I think it will be a few weeks yet before the exact nature of that and how big or how small it is. We yesterday agreed on a working party to work with the board of the, or the transitional board from the old Association of Police Authorities to write some sense into this. And I think it's a sensible sort of bit of work in progress. I mean, personally, I think it's very important that there should be associations with the different roles. Miranda's very clearly enunciated the role of a chief executive, which is quite different from that of the commissioner. The relationship is important, but it's a different role, and people sort of getting together and distilling the essence of that is only going to improve the quality of the advice a commissioner can receive from the people fulfilling the role of chief executive. And I do think that it is quite important to be clear what that role is. It's quite different from a local authority chief executive because there isn't the executive functions that are with the chief constable, for instance, in relation to, you know, the whole of policing. That is a significant difference. But it is nevertheless an important role in setting the tone for staff. And I do expect the Chief of Staff, as the title will be in South Wales, fulfilling the chief executive function, and that of monitoring officer, to be saying to me and to other members of staff, hang on, you can't do that. It's an important role. But he's not there to be the lawyer in our case. No. That's the legal advisor, who I hope is going to give legal advice to both the chief counsel and myself with equal fear and favour. If we ever fall out, of course, there's an issue about how you deal with that, but I think we've got that covered.
And is the association... Police and Crime Commissioner is going to be, I mean, presumably it's going to have quite an important relationship with the LGA, the Common Association, for example.
Yes, that again is part of the work in progress. Yeah. I mean, there's a history here in the sense that I was involved as a shadow Home Affairs Minister in the discussions when the original three associations, the Association of County Councils, the Association of Municipal Authorities and the Association of District Councils, merged. And in discussions at that time in which we persuaded the new organisations that they didn't want to have a separate police authorities in rural areas and urban areas, which was the potential split, but that they wanted to be independent but rooted within the LGA. That broke down over time and the Association of Police Authorities sort of swam off. But the relationship between the Association of Police and Crime Commissioners and the Local Government Association, I think is bound to be a close one in the sense that they both represent elected representatives. But that's what the working group is going to be working out. In Wales, as ever, we have a slightly different situation. We've got the Welsh Local Government Association, which is independent in relation to Welsh decisions, but part of the LGA for wider England and Wales policy discussions, which is quite a grown-up way of doing things. We've indicated as the four commissioners in Wales, we managed to have a collective voice, even though there are two independents, one Conservative and one Labour and Cooperative. And what we said is that we would favour the associate membership so that we can be part of the discussion on policy, on those things that are relevant to policing, but maybe outside it. Again, going back to things like mental health, how we deal with young people, education, a whole series of issues in which we will have an interest because they affect our responsibilities, but aren't directly part of our responsibilities. And again, I think that's potentially, to my mind, the right way to be developing it.
Thanks, Alan. And Miranda.
Just a couple of things. Yes, as professional officers, there are a number of associations. They're mostly linked to bigger organisations. So Association of Police Authority Chief Executives has turned into the Association of Police and Crime Commissioner Chief Executives. It's got more C's in it, but we're still calling ourselves a PACE because we've got used to that. And a number of us are also members of SOLIS, and we link quite closely with SOLIS for a range of things. There's also... as you would expect, the chief finance officers all get together and they're part of that link with SIPFA and that broader conversation. So currently, we've just in the last week had confirmation that the oversight of leaving chief constables off the list of people who weren't subject to corporation tax has now been rectified. But there are still a number of pension matters that are being resolved, and it is SIPFA and the broader people who are part of that policing finance world who lead on those activities. So you'd expect to see that. One of the major differences between how commissioners choose to organise themselves is there are 41 of them. You don't need a very big room to get everybody in to have a conversation. There are email dialogues going on between commissioners on a range of subjects, and in the last week my commissioner has been talking with other commissioners about sentencing and about some pensions issues and about a number of other things where the commissioners are talking to each other to say, do we have a policy? So I think what we will see is a much more agile, dynamic activity. Up until now, all of these bodies, ACPO, the APA, have been public limited current companies, limited by guarantee. They've had AGMs, they've had minutes, they've had voting, they've had all sorts of things. They may want to do that. They may want to think about how they operate. And as Alan says, there is a steering group for them to think about what that might look like. But it's a smaller group than the parts of the LGA. Mehboob Khan has talked on a number of occasions to police and crime commissioners and has a number of sensible discussions are already underway. It's not possible for police and crime commissioners to operate in isolation from other politicians in their area. And the Welsh dynamic is always just that tiny bit more complicated. So... about that, I'll say nothing.
Okay, well, on that note, thank you very much, Adam and Miranda. We'll have a break now for half an hour. Could we be back here, please, for 11:45. Thank you all very much.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from policyreview.tv. For more details, go to www.policyreview.tv. Please note that this audio is subject to copyright and cannot be used by other broadcasters or for commercial gain.